Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
Coming up today, we have candidates for manager and thoughts on the group, plus a Rays trade and kaboom, a playground has been built.
This is Rays Radio. Now here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday, November 10th, and our second This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Remember, if you missed one, you can go back and listen at raysbaseball.com/podcast. That address shouldn't be too hard to remember, or you can subscribe so you automatically receive the newest show. Now, with the GM meeting starting today in Phoenix, Arizona, this was certainly the best time for the latest edition. So with that, let's get started.
It's time to go inside the operating room and take a look at Rays baseball operations.
And we kick off our podcast today with Vice President of Baseball Operations Eric Neander joining us from Phoenix, where the GM meetings are going on during the course of this week. Eric, before you left, the Rays made their first trade under this new era, and it was Cesar Ramos going to the Angels for Mark Sappington. Give us, our fans, an idea as to how this trade came about and how it will help the Rays both in the short and long term.
Well, first, good morning, Neil. The trade itself is something that came together fairly quickly. Left-handed relief, and looking at our starter group, we felt pretty deep there. Left-handed relief, we felt pretty deep. So, we were fairly open to the different things in that area, and Anaheim had, some interest in Ramos, and that had been established over time. And so we reached a point where Mark Sappington is someone that we like and have some history with, going back to his amateur days at Rutgers College. We had some looks at him and have had some interest since. Really just an opportunity to get a guy that slots in our system in an area where we have some, have some opportunity. Someone that we consider likely a bullpen piece. That's where we saw him down the stretch after he transitioned from the starting role, and started to get really excited about him by what he did out there. So just a chance we felt to better balance our system, and where we had pieces, where we didn't, and want to take that opportunity.
And this is a guy who does have a high-end arm with mid to upper 90s fastball. How important was it to find a guy not only like that, but also someone that you don't have to immediately protect?
It certainly was something as part of the equation. We, with our 40-man roster now, we've talked a little bit in the past, but it's an area where we feel like we have a lot of deserving candidates and people that we would like to put on there. So it was certainly a factor in that regard.
Again, we're chatting with Eric Neander on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. The GM meetings are going on now in Phoenix, where Eric is as we speak. Now, I know you're in the midst of managerial interviews that you're really not at liberty to speak about in specifics, but you're also trying to balance making roster decisions like the one we just talked about and finding a new manager. So how hard is the balance now between the two?
Those are the obvious areas of focus. I would say that at any given moment, though, we have plenty to worry about, and it keeps us busy, and there's always a balancing act to some extent. It's certainly challenging, but at the same time, with respect to where we are roster-wise, we have a lot of players under control, everyone under control and returning, and also some guys that are developing and getting closer to helping get to the major league level. So, overall, I guess in that sense, it might be a little bit easier just because of where we're set up roster-wise. That we are bringing back a large group. So, we're not going out there trying to fill, 5-10 holes, while the managerial search is going on, and while, Matt's getting acclimated on certain things and so on and so forth. So in that regard, it probably is a little bit easier. Still plenty to worry about.
Speaking on that end, how has the dynamic changed? And, we've talked, I know, previously about responsibilities changing, but has a dynamic change in terms of the way trades are discussed? Do you get involved in actually trade talk with the teams? Is it now Matt kind of being the voice versus Andrew? What has changed, if anything?
there obviously is some change in that Andrew is not Matt, so, or Matt is not Andrew. so there's certainly some differences there, and both great guys, but both, you know, they're different personalities. Matt has been involved in a lot of our conversations with respect to our, you know, player personnel decisions at the, you know, at the highest level, the major league level. So in that regard, you know, this is something that is, you know, not new and not fresh to Matt in a sense. That being said, the actual day-to-day process of it is something that, you know, he hasn't been exposed to quite as much. But with respect to how we're handling it with other teams, we're spreading out a little bit more probably than we did prior right now, and trying to use the relationships that are in place with various teams amongst all of us to try to get out there and to do it as efficiently as possible as we're talking to other teams.
And I guess what fans probably don't know, how do the GM meetings compare to the winter meetings? Are they much different? Is one faster than the other in terms of the way things go? And does one lay the groundwork for the other? How are they used?
Great question. The GM meetings themselves, in comparison, there's more of a structured run of meetings for GMs, for assistant GMs, for, you know, club personnel. There's more of an actual firm schedule and agenda, so to speak, that at the winter meeting. There are duties, you know, there are meetings that take place, but it's a little bit more spread out. These meetings are not attended by as many people inside and, you know, outside the game. The winter meetings are a much larger, much more populated event. And as far as from a, you know, player discussion standpoint, et cetera, you know, this, I guess, in some way it enables you to set the groundwork for things that might take on more meaning later in the winter. You know, it's an opportunity to connect face-to-face, which I think is always beneficial, and it gives you a chance to get just a real firm sense for what clubs are after, what they're looking for. Some of those conversations have obviously happened over the phone already, but, you know, face-to-face is just a different dynamic. So it makes certain things a little bit more real. You get to find out what interest is preliminary, what interest is real, and from there I would say that, you know, it helps to set the stage for the rest of the winter, and by the time the winter meetings hit, these conversations certainly provide some sort of building blocks to moving things forward at that point in a more serious way.
Eric, thanks for a few minutes. I know you have a lot to accomplish in Phoenix, and we'll speak to you guys when you get back.
Great. Thanks so much, Neil. Enjoyed it.
That's Rays Vice President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander, on our look inside the operating room on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
Time now to head up to the press box.
And we visit with a member of the media today. It is one of my colleagues. We had Dave Wills on last week. It is Andy Free joining us this week. Andy, I hope you're enjoying your off season. Certainly, it's been very busy on many fronts, and we actually have our first trade of the Matt Silverman era.
Right. Colleague, by the way, that sounds cold. I think friend. friend to you, friend to all. I've known you. How many years have I known you now? 15, 16, 18 years, something like that. It only feels like 20. Anyway, it's been a very interesting off season. I think that the process of moving forward is pretty clearly underway with regard to a new GM, so to speak. I know that's the short version of what the title actually is for Matt Silverman, and the new manager. But what's interesting when you go around town is everybody has their opinion, everybody has their thought. They want to ask me. I'm sure they want to ask you and Dave and everybody. Who are they going to hire? Look, we're as interested as everybody else. The one thing that in being with the Rays now for a decade, and you even longer from within the organization, is that they're going to analyze this, and they're going to analyze it some more, and they're going to go over it, and then they're going to do it some more, and analyze and analyze and analyze. And they really do, to coin the phrase, leave no stone unturned. I think some of the candidates that I've been hearing about may be more traditional candidates. Some are ones, including some of the ones that were in their paper the other day, are non-traditional candidates. And I think let's remember back to 2006 or 2005 in the fall. Not a whole lot of us had heard of Joe Maddon. I had known him in name, had never met the man. He was not a large personality in baseball circles. And by doing this same process that they're doing now, they found really one of the gems of managers of this generation. So I trust that they're doing the same sort of thing. But I wish I had more insight. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall of some of these interviews and processes that they're going through? But the one thing that we know is that the Rays are thorough. So whoever they pick, we'll just have to get on board, and let's hope that it's a good pick. I'm sure it will be.
You have seen the same list that we all have. Is there any of them that jumped off the page where you said, oh, that's interesting, or one that you especially liked when you heard it for the first time?
Well, I mean, I think David Martinez certainly deserves a listen to. I mean, obviously, he's part of this process. I don't even know if it's necessarily his job to lose. I don't think that's a fair statement. I think the Rays are looking at him as a viable candidate. But I don't think that the job is necessarily his automatically. I think they are currently going through many, many interviews right now, which is probably a good thing. I mean, would it be the easy choice? Yes. Do I think he's qualified? I do. I do think he is qualified and ready. I think that, you know, we've been hearing comments come from the players in the Tampa Bay Times recently about their support of Davey Martinez, and of course they're going to have support for him. I mean, we all love Davey. He's a terrific guy. He's been, in a sense, groomed for this job. He's been endorsed by our former manager, Joe Maddon. So that would make a lot of sense, but I don't think it's automatically his. And if he were to get the job, I'd be excited about it because I like him very much, and I think he's probably put in the dues to do it. I like to see when guys have some managerial experience. I'm always interested when you see a name like a Raul Ibanez jump up. You know, the days of the player manager really haven't been around since Don Kessinger and Pete Rose and Lou Boudreau, and not a whole lot of have. Not to say that they couldn't be, but I think the job manager right now is very different than what it was in years gone by. I think there's so many things that managers need to juggle that personally, not speaking for the Rays, just personally, I wonder how can someone that has not had any experience running a clubhouse, even if you are a team leader, so to speak, as a player, I think that's an awfully big apple to take a bite of and be able to digest it.
And certainly there were some guys who have managerial experience. Don Wakamatsu and Manny Acta come up. In fact, they were the guys who have major league experience among the names that we do know. Again, sure. A preliminary list. And, you know, some people say, well, they hadn't had success. But, you know, look at Joe Torre, look at Bobby Cox. You can name a lot of managers who the first couple of go-arounds, they didn't have success, and then they matured and figured it out.
Great point. And I think another one of the misnomers is that they had to have been a major league player or a star player. I would have thought by this point in time we'd have recognized that so many of the great managers in major league history were not only star players, many of them were not major league players. I mean, Joe Maddon towards the top of the list. I know Joe had to overcome that stigma through many years in the minor leagues. I mean, Earl Weaver, maybe the best manager of all time. Who knows? He never played in Major League Baseball. La Russa had a very short career. Lasorda had a very short career. On and on they go. So, you know, what I'm interested in, so many of them do seem to be catchers, though. And there are some guys on that list. And when you're around catchers, you can understand why, because they're into every pitch. They are often speaking with managers almost as a go-between between the players themselves, the pitchers certainly, and the manager and coaching staff themselves, because they're just such a priority with regard to game planning. So I always tend to wedge my bet a little bit towards guys that have been catchers, but again, who knows?
And the only guy or one of the guys in that group who fits that bill, who hasn't managed in the minors or the majors, has scouted, has been a bullpen coach, is a guy from Tampa Bay, originally Kevin Cash.
Yeah.
He played for the Rays.
He did. Isn't that amazing? And we're old enough now where you and I saw him in the minor leagues, for goodness sake. But an interesting choice, an interesting candidate. You know, one of the candidates that I read about that spurred my interest was DeMarlo Hale, a guy that I happen to know from his time in the minor leagues, a very wise baseball mind, a very wise person, I think, off the field, and just knowing him personally, having him be a friend. So maybe I'm biased towards him being a primary candidate. I do know that not only does he have a ton of respect from players, he has earned that respect. He has spent decades in baseball, not that dissimilar fashion that Joe Maddon did, in a lot of different roles, on a lot of different levels, is rooted in the fabric of development. And we know that that's so important, especially in the Rays organization, where you're getting so many guys that are in the big leagues for the first time. Plus, he has so much experience within the American League East. I mean, this is a guy that was a bench coach for the Red Sox, for the Blue Jays, for the Orioles, third base coach also. So maybe it's just my personal bias, but I'd love to see him get some sort of a shot. I think he is deserving. He has pretty much had every job, kind of like Joe Maddon did before he took the Rays managerial job.
We're all interested in seeing where this goes, but beyond the manager, we're going to see a lot of roster movement. And the first real move was the trade of Cesar Ramos to the Angels. What was your take on it when it happened? And it certainly is not going to be the last move that we see here in the month of November.
No, I mean, he had an interesting year. I mean, I think Cesar is one of those guys that has never really found himself on a consistent basis. There are times that you'll look at some of the things he does. This last year could not have been more of a microcosm of his career. There are moments when it looks like he is ready to be a legitimate big league pitcher that you can count on a game-by-game basis. I was thinking maybe in the way that almost like a J.P. Howell went from a guy that was a starter to a reliever to swingman to closer that you could really come to rely on. I don't think Cesar never really got to that next level. I mean, there will be moments where he looks like, okay, he is ready to make that step. And they'd have a couple of appearances where he was not just bad. He was so off that you're thinking, how did he have success? So I think maybe change of scenery was a good thing for him. He's left-handed. He's got good stuff. Let's not forget, too, the Rays had interest in him prior to this trade, you know, back years before when he ended up going to San Diego. I mean, the Rays had quite a history with him. I like him very much personally. I wish him all the best. I hope that the times that we face him, he has one of those off days, because when he's good, you know, when he gets strike one, he's very, very good and pitched some key innings for the Rays. Let's not forget, he was a starter last year in the original starting rotation. So I think he has a lot to offer, but I think it's probably best that he moved on to another system.
And he won't be the last, certainly, as the Rays make some changes to open up 40-man roster spots. Should be real interesting to watch. Andy, thanks for a few minutes, friend, and we'll be speaking soon.
Thank you, friend. That's the way. Thanks, Neil. We'll talk soon.
That's Andy Freed on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, part of a regular feature with people who know the team inside and out called From the Press Box. Andy was an MC of a big ALS event over the weekend, and while he was there, I was MC of Purple Stride, an event to raise money and awareness to fight pancreatic cancer.
Time to check out the Community Corner.
Our latest guest on the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast is Team President Brian Ald. Brian, last week the Rays were involved in their fifth playground build with Kaboom. For our fans who don't know, tell us what Kaboom is and how the Rays started working with them on building playgrounds in Tampa Bay.
Great. Kaboom is a nonprofit organization that has built hundreds of playgrounds all over the country. They take a community build model to the approach. And what that means is the playgrounds are built in one day entirely by volunteers. In our case, it was the entire Rays staff, all of whom showed up on a Thursday morning, bright and early, working side by side with local community members in Bradenton to put together a playground at a school called Team Success. Kaboom does a tremendous job making sure that everyone has something to do, and there's a lot of organization that goes into putting 200-plus volunteers to work in order to get the playground completed in that one day.
Now, before you came to the Rays, you actually saw Team Kaboom work where you were. Tell us your personal experience with it.
Yeah, when I was a fourth-grade teacher at a charter school in East Palo Alto, California, we had a wonderful school community, wonderful families, wonderful students, but unfortunately no playground. And so I used to watch our children run around on a blacktop surface kicking a kickball every once in a while. We did have a basketball hoop, but there was no place to really explore risks, to jump around in the monkey bars, to do the things that kindergartners through eighth graders really need to do. And so with nowhere else to turn, we applied for a grant through Kaboom and were matched with a funding partner in the area. And, you know, a year and a half later, we had a playground up and built, and it was a truly exceptional experience for us. I will never forget the feeling that those children had, at-risk youth from some of the neediest families in the entire area, when they realized that people cared about them, people they'd never met before, and that people thought they deserved a playground, and now they had one. It was really pretty wonderful.
And in most cases, this is really who's served by these sorts of builds, correct?
Yeah, Kaboom is focused on bringing playgrounds to communities that don't otherwise have one. And so often that's in the neediest communities. It's where the children are at risk of a number of other issues, and they seek to help solve a lot of those issues by giving kids a place to play and to stay out of trouble.
What does it mean to be able to do a day like this with the staff, having everyone get together and put together something like this?
It's been so personally gratifying for me. I don't think it's a secret among staff members that the Kaboom project is something that I brought with me from my prior career. And to see the amount of support that for both the organization and the effort that we're making, obviously for the schools that we've gone into to provide playgrounds, but also for me personally, it's very a warm feeling, and it's given me a lot of confidence going into this new role.
For the staff, is it kind of eye-opening, too, to see kind of the impact it has on the kids when they have the ribbon cutting? You know, walk us through kind of that day.
Yeah, we were fortunate this particular year to get to see all the students come out at the end of the day. It was about 3 p.m. and look at the completed playground at the end of their school day. And the looks on their faces was absolutely priceless. And the looks on our staff's faces when they saw those kids was pretty moving, too. Number of staff were moved to tears, I think, by thinking that they'd contributed in whatever small way and whatever large way to providing those kids with a playground. It's really a sad thing when kids don't have a great place to play, and it's a really, really inspiring thing when you see them get that playground they deserve.
And it's not like there's just one. You've done, the Rays have done one a year, but there are many, many more schools that are in need, right? How many are applying when you guys are looking through potential schools to get them?
So we've told Kaboom that we want to partner with whichever schools they select best for us. They are the best at finding the most deserving schools and the places most in need of playgrounds, most likely to be able to keep those playgrounds up over the years. There's a lot of commitments that the recipients of these playgrounds have to make in order to receive the grant. But they went through over 100 applications in the Tampa Bay region to select this particular school, and they've done that for each of the five playgrounds that we've built. So we're talking about a whole lot of people who would love to have a Kaboom playground, and those who earn the playground have really done a lot of great work to get themselves to that point.
Hopefully many more builds to come. Thanks for a few minutes on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
My pleasure. Look forward to hearing it.
That's Brian Auld, new team president, on our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast, and a look at our community work, which this week included the build of a new playground in Bradenton with Kaboom. Now, part of that build included Jake Odorizzi and also former Rays pitcher Lance Carter. A number of retired Rays players are going to be helping out in the community too now, and we'll have that in a future edition of our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
It's on the rise. Taking a look at Rays minor leaguers.
Four Rays minor leaguers are now playing winter ball in Australia. Among those there was the organization's minor league player of the year, Johnny Field. And through Sunday, Field was hitting .288 with a pair of home runs. Time now for trivia. You probably saw the list of managerial candidates who will receive an interview, at least a partial list. Which one is a Tampa native? Answer by tweeting at Rays Radio. Be first, be correct, and win a prize. That's a wrap on the latest This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. For more on the Rays this offseason, visit our blog at raysradio.mlblogs.com and follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio.